airplane tail numbers through the sky indicate that there are two private jets that have been associated with him, have been seen or have been plotted into Belarus. One of them was plotted out of Belarus yesterday on a bearing from Moscow, but there's no indication that he is not in Belarus now.
Well, I presume with all his magnificent wealth, even minus what's been liberated from him by the authorities, he has more than one means of transport, like a helicopter or something else, as well as the plane?
Indeed. But I think the indications are that the terms of the deal are yet unpublished that were reached to end the so-called rebellion on Saturday. The terms confirmed in public require the breakup of Wagner under Defense Ministry control, the signing of contracts by the rank and file, or their redeployment to new camp being built near Mogilev in Belarus, or the dissolution and the return home of the men. No indication about the terms extended to Mr. Prigozhin, except that the charge of armed rebellion has been dropped. That doesn't necessarily mean that other charges won't arise in future. And that there's no indication of what role he would play as the leader of the Wagner group in the future. It's a vast, let's call it conglomerate, which has commercial interests, real estate, hotels, media, and the like, industrial manufacturing and that sort of thing, mainly based in St. Petersburg. There's some confiscation of cash and assets that has taken place in St. Petersburg. But beyond that, we don't know yet what Prigozhin's fate will be.
Well, there we do know now, and there was some confusion earlier over the weekend about the casualties involved, and some are saying, well, this was a bloodless demonstration or not really a coup or whatever, but we know that there's more than a dozen men have been killed, and most of them, from what I understand, are on the military, on the Russian military side, with the government seeming sanguine about this as far as Prigozhin's responsibility. What about what recourse do the families of the fallen have? I mean, can they sue him for wrongful death or sue the government for letting the perpetrator off the hook?
Well, you raise good questions, Chris. No one in public or in private is sanguine about the shooting down of Russian military aircraft, apparently three helicopters, a Ka-2 Mi-8s, and the deaths of the crews on board. That's approximately 13 men. The two points to make about that: President Putin has confirmed the deaths in his public speeches, so there's no doubt that these shootdowns occurred. And in Prigozhin's statement, which was released on the 26th, a short statement which he recorded, and it appears to be an appeal directly to President Putin pleading his innocence, he admits that there was the shootdown, and that he claims in his defense that the reason the aircraft was shot down was that they were rocketing or threatening to attack the columns, which acted in self-defense. Virtually everything that Prigozhin says is contradicted by the evidence and by himself. And so he is, in fact, a serial liar. What he says in the statement is that, and I'm quoting, a few people were injured among Wagner private military company fighters and two servicemen of the defense ministry who joined us voluntarily were killed. I don't know what incidents he's referring to in which ground forces, the two men were killed. I've not seen the reports of that, but that's what Prigozhin says.
Well, even if his forces feared being fired on, or even if they were indeed fired on, self-defense seems a pretty rich plea, given the fact that what they were doing was patently off order, to say the least. I mean, if not just outright illegal.
That's quite right. A killing in the commission of a crime is not self-defense under any legal code I'm aware of.
Well, so this begs the question again, then, why is Putin letting him off the hook, do you think?
It's a fundamentally important question, Chris, and we can begin by referring to what Putin has himself said. On the one, he's made two speeches thanking the armed forces, the security forces, for their support. He's made visits and meetings with the military and the security forces, and he's made two appeals, so-called appeals or addresses to the Russian public of about 5 minutes each. In the last one, Putin made a couple of extraordinary statements, and I should read them out. He's in the meeting with defense ministry personnel on June 27, a meeting that took place at the Kremlin. The Kremlin transcript refers to Putin describing how much he was grateful to the military for their loyalty and discipline. He also says, and I'm quoting, "I do hope that no one stole anything in the process, or at least did not steal a lot. It goes without saying that we will look into all of this." This is the most extraordinary statement, and I'm emphasizing it because for some reason or other, the Western press, which is extremely active in misrepresenting what's going on and misrepresenting Putin's role in all of this and his ability to continue to command loyalty in the country, have missed this sentence. And second, so of the Russian press, there's no doubt, and I published this line, that this is Putin's way of opening the Pandora's box on grand, that's not quite the right word, immense corruption in the military contracting in which Prigozhin has been involved. In fact, indicating billions of dollars of state funds spent out of the state budget in the past year, that's May of 2022 to May 2023. And this confirms a very important point, that Wagner was fully financed by the state, a point which the whole purpose of having deniability for such mercenary groups as they operate in Britain, in the NATO allies, in the United States, has been abandoned. Instead, Putin admitted that and stated the numbers, that there were billions of dollars spent out of the state budget on Wagner in this past year. In addition, billions spent on Prigozhin's contracts for catering, food delivery services and the like to the defense ministry. Now, when Putin says, I do hope that no one stole anything, or at least did not steal a lot, that defies understanding.
Well, it strikes me as saying, well, I hope no teenagers got pregnant, or if so, they only got a little bit pregnant. John, we're starting to, and those that have listened to us more than once, we're starting to get that telltale interference in the signal. So can we break off here and reconnect? And we'll pick this up at the Wagner Group's problems with their accounting with the Kremlin. Well, thanks for joining us again. I'm speaking tonight, well, you're listening again to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking with John Helmer. John's a journalist and author. He is the principal behind the Dances with Bears website that has been in Russia reporting on the political and social goings on and economic for longer than anyone outside of the country. And we're trying to make sense, as everybody else, whether in good faith or not, is trying to make sense of what happened last week in Russia. Before we were rudely interrupted there, John, you're talking about whether Wagner is pregnant or a little bit pregnant or what. I don't think it's common knowledge, at least not in the media on this side of the Atlantic, that the Wagner is just one unit of a vast corporation, the Concord group. I'm just making the group part up. And in his speech to the military, thanking them for saving his bacon, he mentions Concord and the billions of rubles, not only that the Wagner group has pulled in from the government, but even 10 times that much, or at least equal to that much, for catering and supplying bog roll or whatever they actually do. And this is all opportunity for more getting pregnant or maybe a little bit pregnant as well.
The exact numbers Putin published were between May 2022 and 2023. That's the year of the special military operation. Wagner received 86.3 billion rubles from the state to pay military salaries and bonuses, which included 70.4 billion rubles for payroll.
Well, 15... he says that says million rubles, and I'm assuming
it's 1,000. No, it says
86,000 rubles.
262. 86.3 billion rubles for military salaries and bonuses, including payroll, bonuses, and insurance premiums for men killed. In addition, Putin went on, the state covered all of the Wagner Group's, in addition to the funding needs of the Wagner Group for that single year, the company's owner Concord received 80 billion rubles from Vontorg as the company's food and canteen provider. Now, that bear in mind, this is one year. The contracts from which Prigozhin has been benefiting for several years, including Wagner operations in Syria and Wagner operations in Africa, extend back approximately more than 5 years. So you can see that Prigozhin has been the creature entirely of the state and its funding, and that what all Russians would know, what all military officers would know when they hear Putin saying this, is that Prigozhin has been creaming, would have overcharged for supply way above cost, and in return for overcharging the state and creaming to the benefit of himself and his leadership, funds would have been kicked back. There would have been bribery paid on a massive scale, because we're talking about let's say, at the very least, approximately $3 billion worth of contracts that Putin himself mentioned in 1 year. So multiply that by 2, 3, 4, 5 years, obviously an acceleration during the last year. We're talking about several billions of dollars, including the diversion. Second, the bribery that would have been involved. All Russians understand this to be the case in facilitating the state contracts. That means that there's a trail of Prigozhin bribes running through the defense ministry. And if Putin says it goes without saying, well, we will look into all of this. It's much more than that. The question that a normal Russian would ask is, why has this not been looked into before? Answer is, it has been looked into before and overlooked. Therefore, the conclusion would be that Prigozhin had high-level roof, the Russian slang for protection for a criminal enterprise.
Well, okay. And we all know it's sort of a stereotype from the Russia days of the 90s. John, I'm getting a lot of interference again. And so if you'll bear with me, I'll do the same again and reconnect with you if you can hold on for just a second. So we're back again with John Helmer. John, Prigozhin, notwithstanding, there's been a lot of other things going on. There's conspiracy theories. There's all kinds of ideas floating around on both sides of the Atlantic. Can we, and I know you don't like to speculate about these things, but right now, as it stands, we've got the remnants of the Wagner group in Belarus. Prigozhin is there, or he isn't there, but likely there. We're not sure of that. What is the official position of the government of moving those troops there? Is this just to get them as far away from Moscow as they can, or is this a tactical move to get them that much closer to Kiev to put pressure on Ukraine, or is there something of both in that, or neither?
I think the speculation in the Western press is almost entirely false, misleading, and based on a very obvious logical fallacy, Chris, of reading retrospectively back into a sequence of facts an idea of a plan that usually is called conspiracy theory, but it's a very easy mistake to make if you're at war and somebody's paying you to run information warfare operations against Russia. The terms that have relocated Wagner under defense ministry control and physically under President Lukashenko's control in Belarus were agreed in the negotiations on Saturday, which stopped the column approaching Moscow, approximately 200 k south of Moscow, turned them around and required them to disassemble their equipment, disarm, and move. Okay, so those were the terms. The future deployment, if any, of Wagner have not been disclosed and may still not be decided, but because the general staff have one set of views and other people have other views. And believe it or not, Russia's managing to be a considerably larger, more vibrant democracy in running this war than any of the NATO allies or the United States or Canada in debating how to manage the war at the tactical level, the organizational level, the financial level, and the strategic level. So much of this is undecided but still being discussed, and we'll find out later. On the other hand, Wagner's groups in Africa continue to operate, and there are trackers who've recorded Russian transport aircraft, the Ministry of Emergencies, taking off from Russia. At least two have been identified, to my knowledge, in flying from Russia, stopping off in Syria, and then flying on to Bamako in Mali. So there's continuing operations of Wagner in Africa, and possibly also in Syria, that continue under military command. So all of the future for this unit, it remains undecided, and it's up to the general staff to decide. President Putin's remarks opened the Pandora's box of thorough anti-corruption investigation of Wagner, of Prigozhin, all his businesses, and of course, all of those who associated with him in the defense ministry in taking bribes to facilitate this extraordinary fortune. For people to make money, profit at this scale out of war, is hardly unusual. Raytheon, Lockheed, and other corporations are very busily doing the same on the Western side. And you only have to watch the stock market indicators of their share price to see that the entire financial markets of the United States and Europe follow very closely in an attempt, as investors attempt, to profit from war making. And that's legal there, overcharging, diverting profit into state funds, into corporate profit. That's part of the arms business, okay? It's considered normal in the West. But what Putin has identified is massive corruption, which Prigozhin stands for and has personally profited from.
Yeah, well, not to mention, I think the number was 2/3 of the U.S. House members had investments in war making corporations like the ones that you mentioned. We saw last week that the Ukrainian military started using these so-called storm shadow cruise missiles supplied from the UK. Yesterday, there was, and this is reported from, I'd like to ask you who we can read on this side of the wire, but this is from Moon of Alabama, which is usually pretty good. But they report that there was a missile attack on a hotel in Kramatorsk. You can correct me on that, my pronunciation. What's interesting about this, though, on another source I saw, was that this was actually felicitated by a local taking selfies with some arriving foreign mercenaries, believed to be Americans and Canadians, who were staying in the hotel. And they also were putting on social media pictures of their dinner and stuff. And this is what revealed them and led to the attack. Do you know anything about this attack at Kramatorsk?
I've read the same sources as you have, Chris. Basically, the method for understanding, which was your opening question, who to read, begins with Russian sources. So you have a dozen or so reliable military bloggers who are part on the scene, part in the on the front, reporting what they see. They also aggregate, that is to say, they collect videotapes, chat, social media chat, which they themselves receive from others, including forces on the front. They then put this material into aggregated lists or publications. The two that are most reliable and are most used are the so-called Colonel Cassad, C-A-S-S-A-D, produced by Boris Rogin, and Rebar.ru, which is another aggregation. Both of them then use each other. Now, what then happens with that material, and we'll come back to the Kramatorsk incident in a minute, is that it's translated into English and regurgitated on the other side of the Atlantic. It's aggregated into English by publications calling like southfront.org, there are several others. One of them has recently popped up trying to sell himself as a military genius. He calls himself Simplicius the Thinker. This kind of arrogance and exceptionalism on the American part is exactly the kind of exceptionalism that's producing the war on the Ukrainian battlefield. Simplicius the Thinker is one of these exceptionalists who aggregates Russian sources and then applies what he remembers or what his group remembers of the military manuals when they served in the U.S. Armed Forces. Similar operations are made as aggregations and interpretations by other bloggers and their names are legion. They're making a living out of this. They invite you to pay $5 or $10 or $15 a month to read their minds. Their minds are basically cribbing from the Russian sources. Their interpretations are based on what they learned at West Point or in the U.S. Marine Corps. Then it moves up one other scale to the so-called experts of, let's say, video blogs like Andrew Napolitano's Judging Freedom. Napolitano was a Supreme Court candidate. He's a retired Superior Court of New Jersey judge. He was a Supreme Court candidate when Trump was the president, and he employs several retired CIA individuals and several retired military officers to comment. Their sources, the modest ones, the honest ones of them, identify their sources as Russian. One of them claims his team provides him intelligence. Basically, it's still the same. There's no U.S. intelligence sourcing that's going on there. It's all from the Russian front. It's aggregated in the pattern that I've told you. What to believe, you ask me, Chris? How to make sense of all of this? The answer, there's no easy answer. It's a very large war, and it's a war for the survival and defense of Russia against the NATO forces, including the United States. So you have to read a lot. You have to read and take everything you read with a pinch of salt or skepticism. There's Moon of Alabama, which takes a pro-Russian perspective. There are other sources which take an anti-Russian perspective, and there are aggregators which try to act neutrally. So you have to add it all up and compare for yourself. What you're missing in all, I say, all of these North American blogs, I should say, by saying North American, I mean the United States. There's nothing like this in Canada, I'm sorry to say. What you have to understand is that these are individuals who are making a living selling their material. That's one thing. And second, they know nothing whatever about Russia.
Well, things have been so crazy. Some of the stories coming out, especially regarding the Nord Stream and the dam that it was, you know, it's been blamed on Russia for destroying their own infrastructure as well as the nuclear power plant. I guess you have to read with your nose is maybe a good place to start here, even if you can't always trust your eyes. Well, John, we're fast out of time, but thanks a lot for coming on and talking to us again, eh?
Thank you very much, Chris. We'll be back again because there's lots still to discuss, and we've only simply opened the Pandora's box at this point in time.
Yeah, you're not kidding. And thanks, too, to John Stauber. Until the next time, John.
Thank you, Chris.
When nothing is as it's presented.
It's a bit like discovering that your favorite uncle that's taken you for walks in the park, but that he's really a serial abuser.
You need a different source.
Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every Thursday and Saturday.